Well, I haven't had time to do a drama or anything like that, but I have become very interested in electronics. And apparently, by putting a few funny noises together and trimming them up, you can make a tune. I'll just give you some examples what I mean. Number one, coming up.
Edit. Compound. A substance composed of two or more.
Edit. Edit.
For many of our students, this is the
edit
you've been waiting for.
Mashups are often boring.
H plus
edit. Edit.
Any physical difficulty with a record or
edit
is taken care of.
Edit.
You're about to play a soul 45 RPM.
Edit.
But the turntable is set at 33 and a third, and the
edit
plays very slowly. Let's pick up the
edit.
Now let us imagine that you're in the middle of your
edit.
This is the mark of a professional.
Edit.
Yeah, if you could throw a couple of
mashups are often boring. Right.
Oh, I'm sorry, I had the
edit
the wrong speed.
Mashups are most cool because I can't really create anything myself, so I really like to create from things that other people have done. So for me, it's really the mix-up, the open-ended possibility, and the surprise factor of getting the unexpected.
Mashups are often boring.
Mashups. Mashups, movie mashups, you know, or video mashups, and also sound mashups. A tremendous vogue. I mean, people on the internet like to pretend this stuff is just unbelievably great, instead of a raw source of creativity, and you know, and that it's fantastic, and boy, nothing gives me greater pleasure than a mashup. Nobody's going to listen to mashups in another 10 years. Mashups are novelty music. They're like the Monster Mash. They have no musical staying power. You know, you're pursuing a phantom there. It's bad music. I mean, it's not bad. It's, you know, it's a pastiche. It's like magazine collage, but, you know, which can be good for what it is. But to pretend that that's like tremendous creative work, no. It's a tremendous creative power, and it can have a tremendous audience, but it's not tremendously good. You know, and we need like a little bit of aesthetic honesty in confronting things like this. Just because it's new and that people with laptops can do it and get away with it and find an audience for it does not make it a real cultural advance. It's an epiphenomenon. It's electronic folk culture, really. You know, and I'm not an elitist. Folk culture is a real thing, and it's a very precious and valuable thing. But it is folk culture. And the downside of folk culture is that folk culture is for hicks.
Mashups are often boring.
And what we want from every artist is that they surprise us and show us something unprecedented. But what that desire and that description always understates is the fact that this act is itself innately supported by response, appropriation, imitation. Everyone's very conscious that to be a proper student, you mustn't plagiarize. And everyone's conscious that
right.
to be a kind of a good working journalist, you mustn't, you know, cobble together your pieces too much or too obviously from pre-existing journalism. Well, I didn't think that way. I thought to be a good artist, you're probably going to be cobbling together stuff from all sorts of sources. Because if that's plagiarism, we want more plagiarism, which he said, of course, in the context of Shakespeare's plays, which are cobbled together from an immensity of historical and cultural sources and could never sustain the kind of ethical framework that we put artworks into right at the moment, or at least literary artworks.
Mashups are often boring.
And we just liked how it sounded. We liked taking things out of their original context and cutting them up. So this was back in the days of reel-to-reel recording tape and razor blades, and rearranging the sounds, mixing them in with original things that we'd created. And most of the time, that's what we do. It's a combination of original music we've composed and sounds that we've made, combined with things that we just take from absolutely anywhere. You know, shortwave radio, talk shows, advertisements, children's records, telephone answering machine tapes, radio shows, talk shows like this one. It all just inspires us, and it just gets us excited. And there's something about, and it was alluded to earlier in your show, there's something where it feels like you're having this really conversational dialogue with this mass culture that's being shoved down your throat, whether you like it or not. And why do I need to ask permission, you know, to do that? No one asked me permission to put up a Pepsi billboard near my home. So I'm not sure why I have to ask permission to take some part of a Pepsi ad and cut it up.
Mashups are often boring.
But we've always continued to be inspired by things that we find. And pretty much had a feeling as we entered into the new millennium that collage and plagiarism and appropriation was going to become kind of like the preeminent art form of, you know, the last part of this century and into the next one. And I really think it has.
The remix always makes something, and that something is not just a remix. The album is not dead. The song is not dead. Terrible truth, mashups are often boring. And even the good ones are no substitute for the songs themselves. More like an interesting mini-essay on music. The novel is not dead. The essay is not dead. The author is not dead. King Tubby and Lee Scratch Perry are one way to make art. They're not the paradigm of the new and only way to make art. Audiences are not passive. What a very strange idea. Where does that come from? And they're not going away.
Go fast. Go cheap. And let it go. And this is hard for educators. Let it go out of control. My people ask me, what's the one sentence you can give, the one sentence piece of advice you can give for people who want to be instructors in new media? And I said, well, it's a very short, it was a two-word sentence. Let go.
You pitch Google and Wikipedia together, and it's kind of game over for the A's. And it's just, you know, the things that one aspired to have in, say, 1985 are just kind of there in a vast plethora. They're just kind of a platform and available to anybody and not particularly fancy and not expensive and incredibly powerful and getting more so and sort of growing visibly in front of you. And just, that's just not an area of struggle. I mean, that's just kind of...
What are you meditating about, dude?
Wait, dude, I'm connecting to the internet with my mind.
Leaves us behind. Now, you might ask, what about e-learning? And I would say, that was super innovative 12 years ago. What have you done for me lately? And if I don't pay tuition and the registration fee and I don't get a password to your WebCT instance and rights to enter that particular course, it's still completely closed.
I can't connect my students to something that they don't have access to.
Michelle taught a great course last semester and I want them to go back and refresh on that as part of what they do for mine. Well, golly, if they weren't part of your WebCT course, they just can't get in there. I can't connect them to it. Personalization. Again, if I don't have the rights to take what you've done and personalize it, I'm just out of luck, or I break the law and pray that nobody notices. Hey, let's just look for a minute at what everybody actually does. Everybody in the world already uses Google to find everything they need anyway. There's IEEE LOM with 70-some, 80-some fields of how much metadata we're supposed to add for each object, but everybody in the world is already tagging things and creating metadata that way. There's the OAI protocol for harvesting metadata that we should use to gather this kind of stuff up, but everybody just uses RSS. There's content packaging and SCORM and all these things that tell us how a learning object should be structured, but in reality, as long as it renders in the browser, it's really interoperable enough. There are all these learning management systems in the world that everybody's using wikis and blogs. In short, there's all this talk about learning objects going on, and really what's happening is people just kind of dealing with resources. Now, what's different between these two things? Well, you know, one is really hard and the other's not. Okay. And consequently, there's very little uptake in one and there's massive uptake in the other. We find that Google and tagging and RSS and wikis and blogs and a variety of things do just fine for us, first-person inclusive. Thank you. You can have your repositories, you can have your IEEE LOM, you can keep your LMS. What happened to free? You know, where did this idea that when things are digital, they could be free? And that it, you know? Now you might say, well, Dave, you don't need free, you just need some kind of adaptability based on some transparent DRM-enabled micropayment system. Well, that sounds great. You know, call me when you have it ready. While you're working on that, you probably want to talk to the recording industry or the motion picture industry about how DRM has worked out for them. It's too hard and it's too expensive. Instructional designers are just like everybody else. We already have enough things to do. We don't need copyright headaches to deal with. So what we really need is not just the ability to adapt things, but we need frictionless adaptability. I don't want to have to come find you and ask your permission. I don't have to wait for a check to clear, the lawyers to get contracts going or anything else. Frictionless adaptability is the kind of thing that this is supposed to provide, right? Creative Commons. It's supposed to tell me up front, here's the thing, you have permission, just go knock yourself out. You don't need to call me, you don't need to do anything. Go for it. So I want to suggest to you that openness is really the only possible successful future. Why? Why? Well, I've just hinted at some of these things. First, DRM is an arms race between major corporations and 13-year-olds in Finland, right? That the 13-year-olds are winning, right?
Good morning. Station manager here. Speaking into the Brian Lamb commemorative microphone here at the commemorative audio console, staring into the Bucktoe Honey Pie Rockadelic live room.
What is that? What is it? 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 Speak to the mic or step down.
Oh!
Speak to the mic.
Help me for truth!